I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. A little technical difficulties here. These remotes are always hit and miss depending on the internet connection. But I think we got the issue resolved. We appear to be running at full speed now as far as I can tell. But kind of reset here, State Senator Jim McClendon here with us. He is a longtime member of the legislature, both the House and the Senate. He's also the chairman of the reapportionment committee, the committee that we went into special session last year, got the census data, and they redraw the lines every 10 years, and he really spearheads that effort. He, along with our friend State Representative Chris Pringle from our neck of the woods. But Senator McClendon back with us here. Sorry about that, but that's how these things go. We'll start all over again. Get your reaction to the three judge panel, that court decision, and kind of What did you guys make of it?
Well, Jeff, and good morning to you. We were really quite surprised at their ruling. We had gone to a great deal of trouble to draw the lines in compliance with previous court rulings and the law and the Constitution. First thing, let me say this. This court case applies only to congressional districts. It does not apply to municipal districts. It doesn't apply to any of the other statewide races. It's only for the congressman. So in 1992, the courts intervened after Alabama drew maps. Democrats were in charge then. And they threw their maps out, and they said, y'all got to draw those where we've got definitely a strong black district where black has got a really good chance of being elected. And that turns out that's the seat Terry Sewell has.
Right.
same rule applied in 10 years later in the 2000 census. Same rule applied 10 years later in 2010. I was House chair at that time. And that's the rule we operated by in 2020. And the court said, well, no, that's not the rule anymore. We've changed the rules. I wish they had told us this before we drew the maps, but they told us after we drew the maps. Now, not only have they changed the rules on the number of majority black districts that there needs to be in Alabama, but they told us we've got to use race to draw the new districts. Now, the Voting Rights Act makes it very clear you cannot use race when you draw these districts. But the courts have told us you got to use race. The only way to get 50-50 or thereabout black population in a district is by knowing the race. So there's two parts of this, particularly the race issue, which is clearly in violation of the Voting Rights Act. They said that's what we're supposed to do. So what we've done is first thing we did, we asked the three-judge panel to stay or just put everything on hold, let us have our election process like we planned on, and they refused to do that. Last Friday, we sent the information to the U.S. Supreme Court. I presume they received it yesterday. And that's to just put a hold on this process so we've got time to work it out and keep our elections on the schedule that we intended them to be on. So last Friday, we sent the information to the Supreme Court. I presume they got it yesterday. The court then has asked for a response from the plaintiffs in this case, and they've required that response be in the Supreme Court's hands by noon tomorrow. So we're waiting then, once the plaintiff's response arrives and the court has a chance to review that, we should get some kind of ruling out of the Supreme Court. We've had 14 states join Alabama as a friend of the court. asking that the courts put a stay on this thing and slow the process down so we've got time to work it out. So that was good that happened. Now, more than likely, the plaintiffs will have some states joining them on their side. So we're awaiting a word from the Supreme Court, which we're not going to get that till the plaintiffs have sent in their information. So it could be later this week, could be next week, and we'll know what the results are. So that's pretty much where we stay. we're on hold waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court to make a ruling on what we feel like is a very egregious demand on the part of the three-judge panel.
Well, and you're pushing the clock here, obviously. You had to extend the qualifying deadline, but these things are, you know, you don't just turn on a dime here to go into an election cycle, especially when you have, you know, maybe some members that would run for these seats prospectively that don't even know if they're living in the district or not.
What a problem it would be to turn around and change the districts after a qualifying date has passed. It's possible. One of the plans that was submitted put two incumbents in the same district, which is strictly in violation of the guidelines that we used in drawing the maps for all offices in Alabama, the House, the Senate, and the congressional districts, and the Board of Education districts. We don't put two incumbents in the same district in the process. We've got a rule against that. So, and one of the plans that was submitted as a possible plan to the courts did exactly that.
Well, do you worry with these new guidelines or what they have seemed to have established, a new precedent, that did any of the criteria would go down to the legislative lines you drew or the school district lines that you drew?
No. These cases that have gone to the U.S. Supreme Court have nothing to do with legislative districts or Board of Education districts. Now, I will not be surprised if there are not additional suits filed that very well could involve the legislature and the Board of Education. And in fact, there is one out there now, but it does not have the urgency and the time element that the congressional districts do.
Well, I guess if they apply a new standard to these congressional districts, would those new standard not apply in the future to whatever else you drew, including legislative seats and school board seats?
Well, you know, you don't know what the courts are going to do. That's right. The issue. If you knew what the courts were going to do, you wouldn't be in court because you'd solve the problem before you ever got there. So, that's definitely a possibility that a suit involving legislative districts could face some of these same questions. But that's pure speculation.
Fair enough. And then you mentioned that there were other states that joined us in this suit with Alabama as friends of the court, or friends of the plaintiff, I should say, friend of the defendant. Essentially, Alabama's kind of the test case here, right? That they have decided Alabama's going to, this three-judge panel has decided this is where we're going to try this new, you know, this new system, and then it would obviously other states would try, it would be tried in other states, right?
Well, what you're doing there is trying to decipher the court's thinking, and that's fun.
Well,
but I don't know what the court's thinking was.
As I say, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm married to one. But listening to the former U.S. Attorney Jay Towne talk about this, and he says his interpretation of the ruling was race can't be the predominant factor, but it could still be a factor. And where I guess I'm confused, I thought it was not supposed to be a factor at all.
Well, now, let me tell you how that works. So we draw districts race blind. That means we don't know what the mix, the population mix is, the color of the skin of the people in there. However, once we've drawn the districts, we do pop that up, at that information up, to see if it could possibly be interpreted as discriminatory. So we do study it, and we are aware of it. And in fact, we've got a guy, a specialist, doing analysis of questionable districts, which we sent off several districts to be analyzed outside the state to come back and say yes or no. These are obviously racial problems you've got in this area. So we have an outside analyst to come in there and see if we've done that. But you do that after the fact.
And that's just to keep it, you know, that you don't want to give the appearance that or avoid that you were drawing the lines based on some kind of racial gerrymandering.
Well, you don't want the courts to be able to interpret that's what you're doing. Every time we change a line, I've got an attorney standing beside me evaluating how the courts will look at it. We went to a lot of trouble to avoid this kind of issue with the courts. I mean, every decision we made, we weigh it against the many court cases that are out there and the Voting Rights Act.
Well, here's a problem that would occur to me. Let's say you had this ruling before you drew the lines, and that, as the court has said, you must do it to make it a factor. But what is that right mix? What is the, you know, is there, are we going to have a federal court decide it must be this percentage, based on this percentage? How much leeway do you have? All of this seems very vague to me with regards to this court ruling.
Vague is exactly the right word. The courts have never yet said, in order to have a majority black district, in order to elect somebody, they've never given us a percentage, a target percentage. They won't tell us you need to have 63% black or
right.
51% black. They just won't tell us that. Now, one of the things that does go into evaluating these districts after they're drawn is what was the percentage beforehand? What was it before you worked on the district? That kind of tells you a little something about the changes that have made. But we have no specific guidelines. The courts have never given us a guideline saying you got to have this certain percentage
right.
of people.
And just, you know, you know the business of drawing these lines and how political it is and partisan it can be. Without knowing that, it really, really muddles the process up even more than it already a kind of messy game, right?
Say that again, Jeff.
Well, so if the court won't tell you exactly what their parameters are and they just leave it out there for you to kind of play guesswork, well, you're already dealing with all the messiness of redistricting and all the politics and all of that, and now you have this additional element that's an unknown. You know, how does this get debated? How do you have these discussions when you're having your joint committee meetings and you're all around the table there and you're having to decipher a vague court ruling and putting that together? That just seems to me that is just going to compound what is already a very, very messy process.
There is no question that the redistricting process is controversial. It is political. You know, you can have two folks running in adjacent districts have nothing to do with race, and they're fighting over who gets the church
right.
you know, that they both go to. So, every step of the way can be difficult. But now here's one thing you have to keep in mind. One of my jobs as chairman was to get enough votes to get it through the legislature. If I can't make enough people happy to get it through the legislature, then we don't have a plan. So every legislator has an opportunity for input, as do the congressmen. They have an opportunity for input, too.
I don't know how you want to respond to this question, but have you got a response from the delegation, the congressional delegation? What do they make of this?
Well, they're exactly the same place we are. We're just kind of waiting to see what the Supreme Court says. Right now we know what their lines are because we got a state law that says here's the lines for districts 1 through 7 congressional districts. So they know that.
Okay.
Now, only th- thing up in the air is what are the courts going to say? And if the courts come in and say, who knows what they'll say, but they could say, okay, you got to change this, then they will have input, but more than likely they won't be real happy with it because they're pretty much agreed upon what they have now. By and large, elected officials like to keep exactly the same district that elected them last time.
Right. The certainty of that district
makes them,
you know, a more solid pick for that election. Let's transition to something else here. I'm sure you have looked at this issue every other way, but speaking of what we just got a few more minutes here, controversial issues. The gambling bill looks like Senator Auburn's going to drop something that was kind of roughly similar to what you had worked on last year. How do you feel about that? It looks like, to me, it's still got some hurdles in the House, but it looks like you guys are going to give it another shot this year.
You know, we sent the House a good bill last year. The Senate sent the bill, the House a bill, and it was a good bill. Or at least it got through the Senate. I thought it was a good bill. I managed to get enough votes to get it out and send it down there, and they did nothing. And it's the same people in the House. So I don't know what's different down there. I have not talked to any of the House members or the Speaker to take their temperature on this issue. I did read where Albritton said he's going to drop a bill. I haven't seen the bill, so I'm not going to comment on it till we get the devils in the details, of course. So, but you're right. The House is an unknown on this issue. And although there seems to be a significant majority of the people in Alabama that would definitely like a lottery, I have yet to have a single person call me and say they would like another casino.
Well, how important is this, though? And you're not running for re-election, but a lot of your colleagues are. This seems to be something that it polls well, that people want it, just to give it some kind of attention in this fourth year of a quadrennium. Seems to be something that you're just kind of answering to a constituent demand, if you would.
Well, for a pure lottery bill, there is a terribly strong demand. I know that. People stop me on the street and want to know when we're going to get a lottery bill. The problem is, and I tried this, I introduced it more than once, a pure lottery bill. Couldn't get anywhere with it. And the reason I couldn't get anywhere with it was the casino and the, they call them bingo machine, slot machine folks, all those people that got a lot of money and a lot of influence. And they said, you're not going to get your bill till we get our bill.
Senator, we're up against a break, but you've been very kind to come in on today, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. House State Senator Jim McClendon, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.